Good morning, this is Frank Settapani with the CBS World News Roundup. The death toll from a poison gas leak at the Union Carbide pesticide factory in Bhopal, India, has climbed over the 1,000 mark this morning as security forces gather up the bodies for mass burials. The deadly cloud of white methyl isocyanate has cleared now, but samples show traces of the lethal chemical remain in the air. The residue of bitterness is directed toward the company and toward government officials as well. Ravi Chopra, a research scientist in New Delhi, accuses the government of lax supervision.
There must be regular checks whether the pollution control equipment is being properly maintained. You need trained staff and personnel, and the basic infrastructure to do that does not even exist all over the country. But the thing is that the companies very often will install the equipment and then not ensure that it's properly maintained.
Union Carbide is halting production and shipments of methyl isocyanate until it knows exactly what happened in India. A precaution, according to spokesman Dick Henderson.
That is an extra measure of precaution. Even though we have an excellent safety record there and over the years, I think the decision was made rather than take any chance at all that it would be an extra measure of precaution to shut the production down until we find out exactly what took place over there in India.
Henderson says the gas has been manufactured at a plant in Institute, West Virginia for more than two decades without incident. Five Arab-speaking hijackers commandeered a Kuwaiti airliner today and forced it to fly to Tehran, Iran. Reports say one of the more than 160 people on the plane was killed in the course of the hijacking, another wounded. Jordan says its ambassador to Romania has been assassinated in Bucharest and a suspect is under arrest. The people who usually ask the questions will be on the answering end today as the House Intelligence Committee holds a hearing on the CIA's controversial manual for Nicaraguan rebels. Robert Shackney reports.
The committee will be questioning senior CIA officials and hearing the report of committee staff investigators in an effort to answer two highly charged questions. Should CIA Director William Casey and his senior aides be held responsible for the manual on guerrilla warfare? And did publishing the manual break the law and violate presidential directives? The law in question is the so-called Boland Amendment, which prohibits the CIA's covert operators from engaging in activities aimed at the overthrow of the Nicaraguan government. The presidential directive is the order forbidding CIA involvement in assassinations. The CIA's guerrilla manual advises Nicaraguan rebels on terror tactics, including the kidnapping and neutralizing of Sandinista local government officials. The CIA Inspector General recommended disciplining only mid-level operational officers for publishing the document. A number of Intelligence Committee members question whether the buck really stops there or extends to Director Casey. Robert Shackney, CBS News, Washington.
A year after the American invasion to dislodge the leftist rulers of Grenada, the moderate New National Party, led by Herbert Blaze, has blazed to victory in the first election since 1976. But Leslie Pierre, a newspaper editor on the island, cautions the U.S. against expecting too much from the incoming government.
I don't think Blaze is just going to do things for people just because they supported him, nor do I think he would let anybody, especially Americans, at this time, dictate to him how he should run the country. Because he will be conscious of the fact that people will be expecting that.
Kendrick Radix heads the party named for the slain pro-Cuban former Prime Minister Maurice Bishop, whose killing by more radical leftists took place only days before the U.S. invaded. Radix contends that the people of Grenada will not take kindly to history repeating itself.
If we lose our independence as we've lost it already, then people will be willing to fight for it again, to fight with strikes, demonstrations, and whatever. Whatever is necessary to salvage our identity as a nation and people.
Some 90% of Grenada's eligible voters turned out for yesterday's balloting. More than 400,000 pupils in the Chicago public schools will have another day off, but talks between school officials and the striking teachers union resume later today amid signs of progress. Alan Bickley of WBBM Chicago updates the story.
Union and school board bargainers used their 10 hours together to clear away all issues save one. And that one, says school board president George Munoz, is the toughest of all, the money issue.
We wanted to report there was a frequency of exchanges throughout today's session indicating good faith negotiations were taking place and that communications was more clear.
Less restrained was union president Jacqueline Vaughn. Her end of the day statement had undertones of hope for a settlement.
We're pleased to report that today's session was productive and we made the kind of progress we had been hoping to make ever since these negotiations began.
With the strike continuing for a second day, the parents of 435,000 school children are looking for short-term child care for the very young and diversions for the older ones. Alan Bickley for CBS News Chicago.
The classroom and words unspoken are at issue in a case before the Supreme Court. Correspondent Fred Graham reports.
The issue arose in Alabama, which, like 22 other states, had a law permitting the public schools to begin their classes with a moment of silence for prayer or meditation. Then Ishmael Joffrey, an atheist who has three children in the Mobile schools, challenged the practice in court.
This is less offensive than oral prayer, but it's still, in my mind, a violation of the separation of church and state.
The U.S. Court of Appeals agreed and declared the Alabama law unconstitutional. It said the moment of silence was a subterfuge to permit unconstitutional school prayer. In today's hearing, a lawyer for the Reagan administration will argue that the moment of silence is a harmless way for the schools to permit children who wish to begin their school day with a silent prayer, and that other kids may simply daydream. The court's expected to decide the matter next spring. Fred Graham, CBS News, Washington.
President Reagan is said by aides to be sensing a shift in the political wind and is apparently ready to accept slower growth in defense spending as part of a deficit reduction package. The American industrialist Armand Hammer had a meeting in Moscow today with Konstantin Chernenko. The Soviet president told him what he's hoping will come out of the meeting next month between Secretary of State Schultz and the Soviet Foreign Minister Gromyko.
His principal aim was to get an agreement that neither the United States nor the Soviet Union would be the first to use nuclear weapons. He said that he had tried this before, but the answer had always been no.
According to Hammer, Chernenko said that if such an agreement could now be reached, it could be signed at a summit meeting that would follow the session between Schultz and Gromyko. White House spokesman Larry Speake said this morning that U.S. policy is that we don't want to be the first to use nuclear weapons, but he refused to absolutely rule out a nuclear first strike. Leaders of the European Common Market meeting in Dublin have resolved a long simmering dispute over wine production, removing one obstacle that stood in the way of membership for Spain and Portugal. The dollar is lower in the European money markets this morning, and gold was fixed at just under $331 an ounce in London. The time now is 10 minutes past the hour.